Welcome to 21 and 21. I'm Haley Burko, and today I'm speaking with Taj Dreja. Taj is a Bitcoin developer, researcher, and well-known as the co-creator of the Lightning Network. He spent years advancing Bitcoin scalability and privacy with past roles at MIT Digital Currency Initiatives, Lightning Labs, and Lightspark. Taj, welcome to Presidio Bitcoin.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yes. Thank you for getting here bright and early to record this podcast.
No problem. It's East Coast time for me, so yeah.
You're up and ready to go.
Yeah.
Cool. We're just going to get right into it. 21 minutes. Let's go. First question. So you've obviously done a lot. What's top of mind for you right now?
Top of mind. I'm actually a little worried. It feels like, you know, Bitcoin is currently about at its highest price ever in dollar terms and, you know, close in many other currencies. But it is a sort of weird, like, are people actually using it? Like, blocks are sort of empty, sometimes sort of full. It's all these like ETFs and stuff. And actually, I'm here, you know, for this interview, but also in San Francisco for a conference about post-quantum Bitcoin. And I'm kind of worried about that as well, because it feels like it could be another big controversial thing that divides a lot of people who work on Bitcoin. And hopefully it isn't, but so it's this kind of weird thing where it's like, I'm worried more about Bitcoin, despite it, like, maybe from an external appearance being like, everything's great, like, it's awesome, price goes up. So it's like, yeah, we still haven't really solved scalability and long-term fees and post-quantum and all these things. So I guess top of mind is, how do we like not get complacent? Or how do we like translate this to getting more people on board to working it on it, rather than just sort of like party, ossification, everything's great. So that's what I think about a lot.
Yes, you're here for the Quantum Bitcoin Summit, which kicks off in a couple hours.
Hour or two, yeah.
We got here early to get this in beforehand. Yeah, and so that is clearly top of mind for you and lots of other people working on like a diverse range of things. And so I saw you recently proposed a quantum resistance upgrade.
Yeah.
Maybe in layman's terms for our listeners, if that's possible, can you kind of talk a little bit more about what that's about?
Sure. So I think the goal of it is basically have something where your coins can be safe today without almost any changes to Bitcoin. I came up, like, I haven't posted it yet, but I came up with a catchy name for it, Lifeboat. Where it's like, okay, like, it's not the way you get around, but if it's like, if your main thing stops working, you have a lifeboat, right? You're okay. And you can sort of get around with that. But the main idea is you can use a sort of commit reveal scheme where your Bitcoins normally are secured by your private key. And it's like, you know, not your keys, not your coins. Like, this key is the most important thing. But most Bitcoins are protected by another thing called pay to pub key hash. So you don't actually post your direct pub key, you post the hash. The quantum computer, in theory, would break this sort of private key in that if it sees a public key, it can get the private key. But it cannot, from a hash, get the public key. So you sort of still have a secret. It's just that now your secret is your public key, and you can kind of use that to move Bitcoin around. It's not good, right? It's like way worse. But it is a way to say, like, hey, you don't have to panic. Like, if this actually does happen, you can still move your coins. Your coins are basically safe, but it's slower and it's sort of awkward and you need to change the software. But it's like, you don't have to do anything right now. It's not like, oh, everyone needs to upgrade. Everyone needs to migrate. So it's a sort of like reassuring, like, here's how we can deal with this if this problem happens.
So is this something that you think developers should mainly be thinking about, or will end users and, I guess, wallets also be effective and have to do something?
Yeah, I guess it's mostly developers. I think if there's one sort of takeaway for average, you know, people who are not programming it, but like Bitcoin and use it, is don't reuse addresses. That's the one. I mean, that's already been something developers have sort of said forever. Like, hey, just use an address once. but I totally understand that, like, people, it's inconvenient and you know, doesn't always work. But as far as I know, most of the quantum recovery schemes work a lot better if you haven't used addresses more than once. So if you like it, and it, to be technical, it's if you receive multiple payments on the same address, that doesn't really break it. But it's if you've received, then sent, and like spent those coins, and then received again. That means the public key is now, you know, broadcast to everyone. So that's sort of a problem. So basically, the only takeaway for users is like, and this is a lot of times wallet software also has to implement it, is, you know, don't try not to use addresses more than once. That's like the safest.
Maybe again, in layman's terms, just we have a broad range of listeners, kind of even talk about why we're even really concerned about quantum computers in the first place.
Right. So it's kind of weird because like I'm not super, like my personal opinion is like, this is probably not going to happen. But I do worry that there's enough people that think it will, that it could be a problem. So the idea is Bitcoin is secured by sort of two things. There's the proof of work, which is like hash functions. And then there's the signatures, which are elliptic curve signatures. And, you know, if you're not familiar with these, they seem like, okay, they're both these sort of math things. If you really look at it, the hash functions aren't really math. They're just sort of like these random, you know, like, hey, take this number and then swap it with that number and then like, you know, shuffle it around and then look at it backwards. And they're like, there's no real mathematical theory behind it. It's kind of like, it's fun and it seems to work, but it's like, okay, that works. And then there's the elliptic curve signatures, which are sort of more like fancy math. The problem is there's this area of research called quantum computing, where it's like, hey, if we make this special kind of computer, which we haven't really gotten to work yet, it could break the elliptic curve signatures. The idea that like right now with elliptic curves, you have a private key, which is just a random number. You essentially multiply it by this point on a curve, which is this complicated sort of, you know, graph thing. And then you have a public key. And the idea is no one can figure out your private key from your public key. But one of the things that a quantum computer can do is figure out your private key from your public key. And this is a paper by a researcher named Shor's. It's called Shor's algorithm from like 1994. And so everyone's sort of known forever, for far, far before Bitcoin was even invented, that if a quantum computer existed, yeah, all this ECDSA stuff, all this RSA stuff, it would all be broken. It wouldn't be useful anymore. But it hasn't mattered because these computers don't exist. And so I've talked to people for years who are like, hey, what about quantum computers? And most Bitcoin people have sort of dismissed it. For some reason, it's gotten more popular in the last couple years, 2 years maybe. And I think there's maybe some progress in like research. I'm like, oh, we're making, you know, getting closer to making these things. I'm still pretty skeptical that it will happen any time in the next 10, 20, 30 years. It seems very far off. But it is a risk. It's sort of like, well, if it happened and it just breaks all keys, like that's kind of the end of Bitcoin. Like, what do you do? So I do think it makes sense to prepare for it, even if you think it's not that likely.
Maybe like the boom in AI and how fast technology has been moving in other sectors is like making people more concerned, or?
Yeah, I mean, they're not like, I have heard that from people, but it's like, they're not related. Like AI is completely different hardware, completely different software. And then the quantum computers are like really more of physics, science experiments. But of course there's people who are like, oh yeah, quantum AI, you know, like anytime there's anything, it's like people raise money and sort of sell it. I've talked to people who work on quantum computing, and it's like, yeah, it's not something that works yet, but it's like really interesting research. And so, yeah, there is more fear about it. I think it's a bit overblown, but at the same time, it's like, no, we should have a plan, right? Because even if I think there's only a 1% chance of this happening in the next 10 years, well, multiply Bitcoin's, whatever it is, 2 trillion times 1%. Okay, that's still like a ton of money. You know, it's like still very worth, you know, making sure that even the somewhat unlikely problems are dealt with. Because like that's sort of all of Bitcoin. Like, I don't know, if you run Bitcoin and you have a full node with all the blocks, you still have like almost 200 gigabytes of these rev files. It's only there for reorgs. It's never going to happen. And like, you know, like half the code in Lightning Network is dealing with like justice transactions, and they like never happen. You know, so it's sort of like, yeah, most of Bitcoin is working on these like scenarios that never happen to make sure that they don't screw things up. So I think it's like very much in keeping. It's like, okay, let's have like a detailed, good plan for quantum computing. Even though it may never happen, it's just like, we're ready for it.
Definitely good to have a plan.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to hear all the conversations that happen in the next day and a half, and hopefully we'll all have a lot to think about and share after that. So we were kind of briefly just talking about this, that it seems like maybe there's a lot of people that could be interested in Bitcoin, especially maybe universities that haven't like fully jumped in. How do you think we can get this kind of like next generation and future minds to be excited about Bitcoin?
It's hard. So I don't tell people I work on Bitcoin. Like, it's like I rent an office and like I'm just like, oh, I work on cryptography or something, because it's like it's gotten very political, right? So like I went to the Las Vegas Bitcoin conference a month or two ago, and it's got like, I don't know, the vice president of the United States of America spoke. Like, I didn't go to that because I don't think he knows. I don't think he's going to tell me anything I don't know about Bitcoin. But anyway, it's just like, yeah, when it started, it was sort of this anarchist, decentralized, you know, like separate money and state kind of thing. And now it's like, you know, and I think I coined the term Bitcoin as the currency of enemies when I was talking about discrete law contract. And it's like, yeah, like I might not like some politicians, or I might not like any of them, right? Like I sort of got into Bitcoin because I'm like, oh, this seems like a really cool way to like not have the sort of standard governments that we have. And it's sort of even, you know, better than democracy in some ways. So it's gotten that way, but it doesn't have to be, right? Like the Bitcoin itself, it's just this currency. Anyone can use it. So I think if it stays around through this and different types of people like it more, then it's sort of okay to work on. But I think it's anytime the price goes up and people who are not involved, to some extent, it pushes them away. And then they're like, well, you know, there's this like jealousy thing. And it's like, oh, I knew about it back in 2015, but I thought it was stupid and I didn't buy any. You might not. It might be hard to say, well, I guess it's not stupid. It might be just like, no, it's stupid, because now it's worth, you know, 1,000 times more or something. So it is this, it's a hard sort of controversial thing to work on. And I think another issue with it is, you know, 90 whatever percent of the Bitcoins have been mined. I've, you know, taught students, and like, sometimes I think of that, like it's going to be hard to get more new people. There are new people coming on. I think that's great. But at the same time, it's like when I started, I could mine Bitcoins with my GPU, right? This is like 2012, and, you know, I could get a couple and like hold on to them, or, you know, maybe I didn't, but whatever. But if you like talk to someone who's like 18 today and like starting college, it's like, well, when Bitcoin came out, like they were who or something, you know, like there's no way they could have gotten into this. And now it's like, there's so many, you know, it is a very front loaded thing. And so it's sort of like, man, 4 years for a halving is pretty quick. You know, the first 4 years, half of all Bitcoin that'll ever exist got mined, and like probably a lot of those are lost. But it is a sort of, it makes it a little more difficult to like get lots of people involved, because there's a perception that like, okay, this is already, you know, it's done, and it's definitely not. But at the same time, like, I think it's super important, and it's, you know, the world is getting sort of more techno dystopian, and I think that Bitcoin can like help a lot with these things. So there's definitely still people like getting involved and really interested in it. So that's great.
Seems like that with the rise of AI, and there's some, it's maybe easier to become a builder, that for certain people, that's kind of fun, and Bitcoin can unlock a lot of different things. In a more optimistic note, what's happening today that gives you the most hope for Bitcoin's future?
So there's a much better like ecosystem of development than there was even a few years. You know, there's like Presidio Bitcoin. It's like, wow, all these people are working on it. There's all these different organizations. There's a lot of funding. There's a lot more people getting into development of Bitcoin. And so I think that's great. This and it's like an actual way you can like make money and work on things. And even though it's open source, but like when it started, there was no way to make money. It was like completely volunteer. And now I think it's great that there are stable, like, it's sort of a career, kind of. Like, I've worked on it for over 10 years, and it's like, yeah, that's how I make money. I work on Bitcoin stuff. Like, it works. So I think that's, like, really hopeful. And also, it's getting more... it does feel like the sort of, like, crypto, like, all the, I don't know, NFT, DeFi, like, all this other stuff has sort of died down, and people are like, wait, actually, Bitcoin's kind of useful. Even if it doesn't do all these other random things that we were looking at, because that's from the beginning, I was like, I think money's enough, right? Like, I think if you like remake money, like you don't really have to do other things. And I think that's getting hold where people are like, oh yeah, like it's money, and that's really important. So I think that's a really good trend. And I think also people arguing about it is also good. Like there's people arguing about all these somewhat silly things. Like people were arguing about like filters and spam and op return and all these things. And I think they're not particularly important, right? Like I don't, in the big picture, like these are pretty small details of Bitcoin, but it is a cool way that like people are learning about it and they're like, oh, I want it. Like, I need to run a node so I can run knots. It's like, well, I think that's kind of silly, but sure, run a node, right? Same with a year or two ago, there's like, what is it, ordinals and BRC20 and all this stuff. I think it's kind of dumb, but people were running nodes because of it. People were learning about Bitcoin because of it. And so it's like, even if this is a use case you think is kind of silly or maybe it's a fad, it still gets people involved. And if people are like, oh, I got involved in Bitcoin because of like, you know, JPEG, NFTs, but now I realize it's actually useful. Like, okay, great. Like, so it's sort of whatever weird thing that people might complain about, it still gets people involved. And then once, you know, not all of them, but once they start working on Bitcoin and using it, a lot of people stick around. They're like, okay, actually, this is pretty cool.
Tension is good. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any dream projects that you would like to see somebody build?
I mean, I don't know what a dream project. I think we're still a way. I think we're still, it's still hard to use. It's still like, I help a bunch of people use Bitcoin. It's still hard to like run a full node, have a wallet with it. Even little things like BIP39 seed phrases, 39, 30, aren't supported in Bitcoin Core. Right. And that would be something cool. Like that's a pretty easy thing to put in. So there's lots of little things like that, but I think usability is a hard one where there's a lot of people who leave money on exchange or something like that. It's just because they're too scared to use an actual node and run it themselves. And so, you know, that's a hard problem, but I think, and it, we're, you know, getting there. But that's something I would want to see. And then let's see, dream project. I don't know that it's like project. Like there's lots of cool things being built and I want to build lots of things too, and like never get around to it. But I think one of the big ones is like, okay, we still need to work on usability. And then I guess the other dream that I think would be cool, which people might disagree, I think client diversity is a good thing. Like I think part of the idea in Bitcoin is like it's open source. That doesn't just mean you can like look at the code. It means you can write the whole thing from scratch if you want. And I know a lot of people say like, no, that's a bad idea. Don't do this. But I feel like long term, it shouldn't just be, you know, Core, where it's like a group of people that work on this one software project, because you don't want to be seen as in control. And so I feel like as it gets more bigger and like more political and government starts saying like, hey, what is Bitcoin? Like maybe we want to regulate this because that's what we do. I think it would be better if there were multiple implementations that were actually used, because then it's easier to sort of say like, well, we were just work on this software, right? But if it's 99% of the nodes run this software, it's a sort of point where people can say, hey, why don't you change your software? So that's sort of a dream project that maybe someday there will be like a several competitive and like, you know, very compatible like implementations. We have BTCD and like people work on that and I think it's cool. But it's, you know, right now it's sort of Bitcoin Core is the one everyone, the best one that has all the mindshare, which is like, it makes sense. But as it gets bigger, like, yeah, maybe we could have all the other implementations. So I know people disagree, but yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. Things have changed a lot since you've been in the space. So you're at MIT's Digital Currency Initiative. How do you think, which does a great job of funding, that we can better support open source developers? What can companies or universities do that's helpful?
It's so the funding and open source landscape's like way better than it used to be. One of the things I'm looking at is like education. So that's one of the things I wonder about too, is if there are people who are interested in this, like all around the world, are universities the best way, or is like some kind of online thing or in person? So I guess here Presidio Bitcoin has, you know, a lot of people coming. But yeah, like how to get people educated and involved in like building these things. There's, and it's not that there's no one doing this. There's tons of people doing it. But I think it's still really important that, like, either students or people who are already, you know, working on computer stuff learn how it works. And also, like, education for people who might not be programmers but want to know how this stuff works. So I like a cool story is, like, my dad didn't buy Bitcoin, and I was like, tell him, hey, the Bitcoin. And then he's like, I don't understand it, so I'm not going to buy it, which is like, okay. And then he sort of retired. I mean, he still works part time. He sort of retired. And then I saw him at, like, Thanksgiving. He's like, so how do they determine the generator point of the elliptic curve? I'm like, whoa, okay. So, and then he, like, bought some Bitcoin, right? Because he's like, I get it now. Like, you know, learn about it. So I think that's a big part, as you don't want, or I think it's a little dangerous if you have a huge user base that doesn't really know about how it works, right? They're just like, oh, it's Bitcoin. You just buy ETFs or buy MicroStrategy and it goes up and you make money. It's like, okay. But I think it's a lot sort of safer and more robust if you have a lot of people who are like, oh, it's Bitcoin. And maybe I'm not a programmer, but, like, I've heard of that, you know, like, I've heard of this is how this works. And I have some understanding and run software. So I think even education for people who may not be developers, but just users, is also important.
Education's tough. There's definitely better education coming out, and it keeps coming, which is great. One more question.
Sure.
Maybe end with a non-Bitcoin question, or it can be Bitcoin too. Do you have any recent books or articles or podcasts that have blew your mind that, or you've been thinking about that you want to recommend?
I guess maybe not at the moment. So I have a little kid, and I'm mostly feeling, you know, like Bitcoin, and then watching a lot of kids shows. So there are some cool kids shows.
Do you have an itty bitty?
No, I guess I like Mr. Rogers goes to the U.S. Mint in one of the videos and sees how, like, money is made. So it's like, oh, cool. He's got connections. But I'm trying to think what do I recommend, you know, delving Bitcoin?
That's okay. That's okay. You can think about it. We can end with a different question. So if you could leave our listeners with a single thought, what would it be?
Bitcoin is what people think it is. So if you think, oh, it's totally safe, it's totally fine, like, it can be redefined. And I think that's one of the scariest parts and also most powerful parts. So it's, you know, you determine what Bitcoin is. So to that extent, like, know what it is and know what you want it to do. And you may be faced with choices in the future of what Bitcoin is. Like, that happened sort of with forks back in 2017. I wouldn't be surprised if that continues to happen as it gets bigger. So it's really up to everyone who has Bitcoin and uses it to, like, determine its future.
Fantastic. Well, if our listeners want to learn more about what you're doing or follow you, what should they do?
I should make a website. I guess I use Twitter sometimes. It's just tdryja. I think I made a Noster, but I can't get it to work really well. I should. But yeah, Twitter, or I guess on Delving Bitcoin mailing list, stuff like that. Or, you know, just, like, come to a conference, bug me, ask me questions.
Perfect.
Cool.
Well, thank you for coming here so early in the morning. And no problem. I hope you have a great time at Presidio Bitcoin and the Quantum Bitcoin Summit.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you.